Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome and thank you very much for joining us. Our guests tonight are Paul Jenkins, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and by phone, Libby Casey is joining us from Washington, D.C. Paul, Mayor Sullivan has taken aim at the emissions testing program. This is a hardy perennial making a comeback. Tell us about it.
It's making a comeback right in the middle of the election. How about that? In 2007, the Assembly moved to get rid of IM because newer cars emit fewer emissions, bad emissions, carbon monoxide. And they were well on the way to doing that until the Assembly changed, and Matt Klayman and Gerald Selkrig decided they would try to bring it back. And he's now moving to start that process again to get rid of, oddly enough, in the middle of an election campaign, try to get rid of that again, and that's where we are right now. He'll propose something on April 13th. They'll have till the 27th. There'll be a public hearing, and then we'll proceed. And even if it's passed, even if it goes through the new Assembly after the April 6th election, it's still going to be more than a year probably before anything is done. It's got to be approved, whatever we do.
Can you clarify for us what the current federal requirement is here?
The current federal requirement about parts per million?
Yeah, well, not in that sense of what we're supposed to be.
We're supposed to meet EPA air quality standards. Like we've met them for the last 15 years or something like that. We only violated them a handful of times after they put the machines in. So IM is really not catching anybody. 90% of the cars pass on the first trip through. 10% don't. So 90% of us are subsidizing 10% lousy.
And I do know that one of the testing sites is right across from my house, less than 100 yards. And I've acquired enough to know that dust is one of the things that
they do dust and carbon monoxide, particulates, and all that stuff. Yeah.
Steve, the last great race is over. At least we have a winner.
A winner, yeah.
Tell us, first of all, this is a unique Alaska event that involves all kinds of Alaskans. How did Channel 2 cover a giant race in the wilderness? Mm-hmm. How do you do this?
Magic, Mesa, you know, and a lot of prayer beads, things like that. I don't want to sound like we're bragging.
That's okay.
We have it down to somewhat of a science. I mean, there's still a few things that go kablooey out there, and it's just a credit to the folks who you don't see in front of the camera and the folks that you do see in front of the camera that they hold it together out there because they work in some very harsh conditions as well. They don't get a lot of sleep. They lug 2,000 pounds worth of equipment, I think that's the estimate that we hear. We have a thing called a NORSAT, which is a portable, which sounds like, it should fit in a little tiny box like this. It doesn't. It's a portable satellite uplink that allows you basically to broadcast from anywhere on the planet as long as you can see the satellite, right? Well, this thing comes in about, at least a dozen containers, probably a little bit more than that, and we get it on a charter plane, and we lug it from most of the village, from village to village, and put it all up, and it's not as compact and portable as it may sound, but it allows us to broadcast out of these remote villages.
And if I might, ideally, the race would end at 5 p.m. Isn't that correct?
Boy. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 6 o'clock would be really good. 6 o'clock with news hours on would be perfect. This was as blew me away that Lance Mackey actually stormed into Nome at the time that he did. I mean, I can't remember. Libby Riddles, maybe the last time I can remember.
It beats 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. That she came in like 8:30 in the morning or something like that. It was light. So usually it's in the it's usually 1:30, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning that they come in. So this was pretty good. But, yeah, if we could ever somehow figure out a way to get them to come in right at 6 o'clock, we would be really happy. But, Lance Mackey, you said this is a unique event. He is a very unique person, a very unique musher. He won it for the fourth straight time. That is some kind of domination in this race. A lot of folks say, you know, great dog team, but I think he's also a great musher. He knows
his dogs
well.
And also, there's one of the great Alaska visuals comes at the end when the winning musher has at hand, or perhaps in his lap, his lead dog, who is covered with roses.
Yeah. That's probably, I think, the defining picture, the iconic picture of the race is when the two lead dogs side by side, winning musher. They have the laurel wreaths around them or whatever. It's a great team picture.
And a great moment for Alaska.
It is.
Let's get Libby Casey in here. Libby, the great health care reform debate is about to have a vote, or perhaps not, but it's certainly we're going to have an outcome here on the Obama health care proposal soon. What can you tell us about what the Alaskans are saying and their participation?
That's right. Well, it may not be as exciting as the Iditarod, but I'm talking to you right now from the Capitol, where things are sort of at a fever pitch. It's crazy around here. The latest news is that President Obama plans to come here tomorrow afternoon to meet with Democrats and try to seal the deal. And a vote does look to take place Sunday afternoon or evening. And Congressman Don Young was just on the House floor this afternoon calling the bill gobbledygook. He's, of course, united with other House Republicans against the bill. He says he doesn't understand it, and he was actually a little hard to understand, but the point of his speech, I guess, was that he doesn't get it. He thinks it's too clunky and too big of a bill. By now, we've all heard what's happening in the House, right? The deem and pass, which is the approach Democratic leadership is using. And basically, members won't vote on the actual bill. Instead, they can deem the Senate version approved if House members adopt a set of changes. And Senator Murkowski has been part of the Republican team really railing against that and complaining about the tactics being used. And she's calling it March Madness. Mm-hmm. Well, the big thing here yesterday, though, in Washington was seeing the numbers, because the budget numbers are finally out. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says that it carries this price tag of about $940 billion, but in the end, it would reduce the deficit by about $138 billion over a decade, and then in the next decade, more than $1 trillion. And that was welcome news to Senator Mark Begich, the one Democrat from Alaska. He's not really weighing in on how the House is conducting business, but he does say that he feels like the Senate has gotten a full dose of this. They've really vetted it. He's taken the time to talk to people. He said he's heard from thousands of Alaskans, both against and for, and Begich says it's time to move forward. And in his own words, he says the bill isn't perfect, but he believes it will be good for Alaskans, and points to things like limiting the control of insurance companies, stopping them from denying people with pre-existing conditions and getting more kids covered. It would close that donut hole, which is the coverage gap and Medicare prescription benefits that seniors face.
Says civilization will end, if I might interrupt you briefly.
Civilization will end. It will potentially cut Medicare. It will boost taxes. And there are taxes. There's an increased Medicare payroll tax on investment income and the wealthy. And Republicans just don't like it and say they should start from scratch. But, you know, folks like Murkowski and Begich can talk all they want, but they're not in the hot seat right now. It's really about the House where the high drama is unfolding this weekend.
Thank you very much. The legislature is taking aim at some big, big issues in the last few weeks of the session. They've been working on a couple of them earlier. First of all is the rewrite of the oil tax laws. Second is the question of so-called decoupling of oil and gas tax. And third is a suggestion, a movement to build an all-Alaska gas line from somewhere on the North Slope to somewhere in South Central Alaska. Paul, please sort out these conflicting aspirations for us, and what do you expect?
I don't know. It's getting more confusing by the day. When you start talking about rewriting the oil tax law, you're talking about rewriting ACEs,
yes,
adopted in 2007. The oil industry believes it's an unfair tax. The progressivity included in that tax is onerous. At the top rate for oil at $140 a barrel, they're paying 80-90% to the state, and when you include things like corporate income taxes and land taxes and everything else. So they say, well, there's no reason for us to invest here. So their investment is drying up, and people are being laid off. So those who want to rewrite that law, I think, really have their hands full, because there's people who will fight tooth and nail to keep that progressivity. Democrats like the idea of progressivity in that bill. They will do anything they can to maintain it. That's how the state manages to come up with a surplus, is when they have the progressivity clause in. That's the first one. The second one, to decouple.
Maybe we need to explain what's coupled.
We have oil taxes, gas taxes are treated about the same in ACEs. Okay? So you have 6,000 cubic feet of gas equals one barrel of oil, and it's taxed the same. So you combine them, and you've got this situation where you have very high-value oil with very low-value gas. Well, that's great for the oil industry. They'll combine them. They blend the prices together. They blend the amount together. They deduct transportation and expenses, and they foil the progressivity. They actually will take the price down so that it gets below a marker, say, in progressivity, to save money. Well, the state's thinking, well, we can't do that. And so at one point they figured, well, we're going to lose $2 billion, and then last year it would have been almost $1 billion. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to find a way to either surgically, without progressivity, is where it stands now in the Finance Committee, I suppose, they're trying to surgically separate those two. I don't know how that's going to work because the Democrats, once again, oh, we love progressivity. What are we going to do? The kicker is on May 1st, in Aegea, on May 1st, whoever has put into the first open season, whatever the gas price is at that point is what's locked in for them over the next decade. People who are detractors say, well, it doesn't mean anything because nobody's going to bid in the first season. Nobody's going to offer up. So that'll move that date back. So that's confusing as well, exactly how, at what point, what day will May 1st become down the road.
And my understanding is the Senate majority, all of them, went over to talk to the Attorney General Sullivan to talk about these matters. And so there's a lot of concern, and that would be both Democrats and Republicans sharing that same kind of concern.
Right.
Thank you for that artful discussion.
Boy, we still got more. Oh, no, we're not done. Then you have the build a gas line to Tidewater thing. Now, this is just...
How could I leave that
out? This has been on tap forever. Wally Hickel wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. Mr. Walker, one of the candidates, he wanted to do it. Bill Walker. Everybody went, well, we can do this. We can make this work. Oil industry did a study some years ago and said, nope, it's not economic for us. We're not going to do it. People keep pushing for it. Well, now, Ted Stevens, of all people, who has always been a supporter of the big gas line through Canada, steps up and says, nah, that's not going to work. Essentially, there's too much gas in the lower 48. Prices aren't good. Pacific Rim, prices are way up. Demand's going up. And that's where we want to go. Well, then they had a hearing yesterday. And Liesl McGuire, Betty Davis have House of Senate Bill 287. That would use the railroad to finance through bonding and that sort of thing, a gas line in state to Tidewater. And we had Bill Sheffield there. He said the state should finance part of this line. They should build it. Even Murkowski, former Governor Murkowski, says, well, and he kind of tacitly approved the whole idea. Pat Gamble, a former head of the railroad who's now going to be the University of Alaska chancellor, says, well, you know, yeah, we can do this. It's not a problem. And this guy's got a track record. He knows what he's talking about. And that's where it is. And some in the legislature, we always have a contingent somewhere that says, hey, wait a minute. Let's slow down. So that's where we are.
Okay. Thank you very much, Paul, again. Steve, what can you add to what Paul told us,
and
what do you hear from
you? Not a thing. He did so. You know what they need? You know that little flex tubing stuff that comes out of your dryer?
Yes.
They need 1,000 miles of that and just kind of move it. Oh, you need someone to go to Tidewater? You just kind of plug it in over there. And the Chinese need some gas. Okay, you plug it in over here. That's what they need. Just 1,000 miles of that stuff and just move it around.
You did
so well with it.
I sensed there was like a burp in the universe, and then everybody popped up, and the momentum of this thing is trying to turn. Nobody knows which way it's going to go, and people are trying to.
Amazing to me, though, that these all seem like really plausible ideas, and you did such a great job of ticking them off and describing them, and they all seem like great ideas, and we've been talking about a natural gas pipeline for how long now?
1977.
Really? Yeah. Now, why? Well, how have they all come up all of a sudden in the span of just, it seems like, a year? You know.
Well, I was going to add one thing, and that what really struck me, and that is in Senator Stevens' testimony, especially in Governor Sheffield's also, less so in Murkowski's, was the idea that this is going to be easy. All you need is imagination, willpower. It was straight out of the Wally Hickel playbook.
Yeah, well, Governor Sheffield sounded just like Governor Hickel. Just like, hey, we haven't built anything really big in a long time, so let's do it.
Oh, and we're the kind of people who need a big project to maintain our bodily fluids or something.
Yeah, it makes good sense. I mean, it all sounds really good on paper, and it just seems like these things, incredibly complex issues, and they arise within a month of the end of the legislative session. And I think Senator Stevens is absolutely right. They've got to do something, and they've got to do it relatively soon. And then there's the faction, as Paul said, there's the faction out there that says, well, let's just slow down a little bit.
There's also a faction that says, I live in Ketchikan, Hoonah, or Nome. Yeah. What's in it for me?
Yeah, right.
Paul, did you have one last word?
One other thing. This is not sitting well with the GIA supporters.
Exactly.
Who are kind of going, hey, wait a minute.
For example, Trans-Canada.
Yeah. Trans-Canada.
Trans-Canada's got a deal that the state
made. That's right. And the governor's even kind of waffling on this.
Let's get Libby Casey in here. We've had her out of the loop too long. Libby, the Obama administration has put forward another initiative, a big initiative. It's to change the No Child Left Behind Act. What is Secretary Arne Duncan saying, and how would it affect Alaska?
Well, that's right. The White House wants to see a complete overhaul, including getting rid of that name, No Child Left Behind. A big thing that would change for Alaska, instead of teachers having to be highly qualified in each subject, which has been hard, really impossible for rural Alaska teachers to meet, the teachers would instead be judged by their successes, you know, how students are improving, whether kids are showing up for class, things like that. But rural senators have a lot of concerns, and Senator Murkowski got to talk publicly at a hearing this week with Education Secretary Duncan and brought up things she feels like they're just not addressing. For example, if schools are underperforming, a lot of Duncan's solutions include firing principals, laying off teachers, shaking things up. But Murkowski pointed out that in rural Alaska, there's already a serious struggle just to get teachers there and retain them. And that did seem to gain genuine sympathy from Duncan, who visited Bethel and Hooper Bay last summer. And he told her, and he's also told me, that that trip was a revelation for him and basically life-changing as an educator, because seeing a truly remote rural village like Hooper Bay changed his perspective on what it can mean to be a rural teacher. And he said that he would work to try to ensure flexibility when meeting these federal requirements, and said that he wants to see a complete rethink about how teachers who go to impoverished areas are rewarded. He wants higher pay. He wants to see their work celebrated nationally. And he's talked about things like setting up programs at colleges to help teachers learn how to teach specifically in rural America, so it's not just sort of an afterthought. One thing I wanted to mention, Michael, is that, you know, there's an interesting development. The secretary's established this new program called Race to the Top, in which states are competing against each other for money. And Alaska was one of about 10 that didn't even apply in round one. They didn't bother. And this was part of a Palin administration thing that then rolled over into the Parnell administration. The state says, though, that it will jump into round two, and there's a lot of potential education money on the line. So school districts in Alaska are eager for them to try to get on that.
Thank you very much. Governor Sean Parnell continues to take shots at the federal government, particularly the way they manage natural resources here in Alaska and administer them as well. Steve, the governor has urged Attorney General Sullivan to sort of take no prisoners in some of these conflicts with the federal government over resources. Tell us about it.
Well, he's taking aim at the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. He wants Congress basically to set greenhouse gas emission standards rather than the EPA. That's also what Senator Lisa Murkowski is advocating. So he's backing her there. And so we'll see perhaps litigation in that on that front. He's fighting with the federal government over the listing and potential listing of animals on the Endangered Species Act.
Especially whales in Cook Inlet.
Whales in Cook Inlet, of course, that's the big headliner right now. So he has urged, instructed Attorney General Sullivan to enter any legal fight that pertains to Alaska on this. And of course, he says it's a matter of Alaska's economy staying strong and a matter of jobs. He feels that a lot of these listings aren't warranted. So he's being ever vigilant with the EPA, with a number of federal agencies out there over
Paul,
a couple of issues.
The governor must also know that no Alaska governor has ever gotten broke taking issue with the federal government. So principle, politics, or both?
I think it's very nice when your principles coincide with your politics, especially during an election year. So that said, I think what he's doing has to be done. I'm not sure how effectual he'll be, but he's showing the flag. And I think Alaskans expect that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they expect to get anywhere, but it is nice when you're when your principles do stumble across your politics.
Well, there are times when we've been successful in challenging the federal
it's rare.
Control. But, I mean, it requires money. And
money,
I think
time.
Mostly what's disturbing to people is many of these issues take so long to resolve.
That's true. I mean, some of them, I think, have been going on since, you know, we were all kids, and I don't know if they're ever going to be resolved. They're very thorny issues, but it's you have to admire his gumption for going after them.
Okay, let's get Libby Casey back in here. Libby, Senator Lisa Murkowski is not backing down on her challenge to the EPA, her resolution disapproving of the EPA, or deploring, depending on how you look at it. What's her concern, and what is the likely outcome at this stage?
That's right. Just like Steve was talking about, Murkowski's concerned about how the EPA will regulate greenhouse gas emissions from stationary sources like power plants and hospitals. And this disapproval resolution, if it passed through the Senate and went all the way to the top, it would basically take the power away from the EPA. She's gotten some bipartisan support, but she's not moving forward with it right now. Her staff says she's not backing off. She has until at least the end of May to bring it up, and is in the meantime waiting for the health care issues to kind of get resolved one way or the other, and also waiting to see how a proposal from Democratic Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia, where that goes. He's put forth something that would basically give the EPA a two-year timeout on regulating these stationary pollution emitters, and that may be able to get more bipartisan support. Murkowski sent a letter to the head of the EPA, Lisa Jackson, over her concerns a couple weeks ago and still has not heard back. So there's a fairly fracturous situation there. And there are some sides being drawn right now. One of the publications we read down here on Capitol Hill, Congressional Quarterly, has a story today talking about how while energy and farm groups are backing Murkowski, the auto industry is not, actually. So that may sway some of these more conservative Democrats who are in states that have a lot of big, heavy auto industry presence. As to what would happen, well, she only needs 51 votes, not 60, to get this through the Senate. And there is a similar resolution in the House, but if this gets to the president, he's never going to support it. This is his own administration she's taking on. It may end up being more of a bargaining chip when it comes to negotiations over climate change and energy legislation. And one thing, you know, some Greenpeace protesters, you guys might have seen this, were arrested earlier this month for unfurling a giant banner of Senator Murkowski in her Senate office building. And it was a picture of her and a spoof on these dating websites, and it paired her with companies like Exxon. So that got a little bit of play down here with some powerful visuals from the arrested protesters of Greenpeace.
Okay, Libby, let's stick with you. Senator Don Young continues to insist he's not giving up on earmarks, and Congressman Don Young was vocal this week speaking out on behalf of Sea Alaska. Tell us about both of those.
Right, well, House Democrats first said, you know, for a year, we're not going to touch earmarks for for-profit companies. And not to be outdone, the House Republicans said, well, they'd ban all earmarks for a year. But that did not sit well with Congressman Young. He calls that political posturing, and he plans to request earmarks anyway. And I don't think he's bluffing. They're doing a couple of days, so we'll see a list then as to what he actually requests. But his office says they've gotten so many requests from Alaskans, they have to pass them on. Now, where that will go remains to be seen. Will the Democratic-controlled Congress give Don Young's earmark requests any heed? You know, maybe if they want to buck the Republicans or point out that a Republican is ignoring the will of his own party leadership, that could get a little more complicated. He probably won't be alone. There may be a handful of other Republicans who defy leadership and put forth some requests anyway. And the Sea Alaska bill, that's a real controversial bill in Southeast Alaska that would give that corporation, the Sea Alaska Native Corporation, some lands in the Tongass National Forest, allow them to do a land exchange, basically. And there was a big hearing here on Capitol Hill where the folks from Sea Alaska came down and supported it. Some other locals came out against it. Young is a huge proponent of it and gave the Obama administration an earful because they are now coming out and saying that they think that the land exchange could be a bad idea and could set a bad precedent when it comes to dealing with land conveyances to Alaska Native corporations.
But Libby, if I might, clearly Congressman Young would need some Democratic allies to get this bill to go anywhere in the House. How does he do that?
That's right. Well, he does have some alliances with some of the House Democrats who are on his Natural Resources Committee that he's a member on. He's not the top Republican there anymore, of course. But they may be in a bit of a tight spot because they've got to decide if they're going to go with the Obama administration or with him, sort of that loyalty because they've been together for so long. Once the Obama administration came out this week against that bill, it is problematic for the supporters. And the whole delegation supports the bill. So it does not bode well for the future of that and may complicate matters a lot more. We'll see as that bill sort of makes its way through the committee process and gets marked up. Maybe there are changes and fixes that could be made that would appease folks.
Paul, in about 45 seconds, soda pop. Soda pop is suddenly in the news.
Assemblywoman Cheryl Selkirk has decided...
Sheila.
I'm sorry. What did I say?
Cheryl.
That's close.
Sheila.
She has decided that our children are obese and that we need to... the problem, the reason for it, is sugar in soft drinks and simple syrup. So she wants to... she's introducing an ordinance to tax it. She wants to tax the sugar out of soft drinks.
And what's the schedule for hearing this matter?
I think she has... I'm not sure when she's going to introduce it soon. I think in the next week or so. She doesn't have much time, I'm afraid. But you know, she'll toss it in there and we'll see what we do. It's been tried in other places. Philadelphia most recently. They found it was way too complex trying to collect the tax. So now they're going with the garbage tax.
We're
going to
run out of time here, but we have about 30 seconds. I wanted to say one thing. I was in Juneau this week. I spent 5 days there. And there were a number of things that struck me, and I'll have an opportunity to write about them. But one of them... was the disenchantment among so many Republican members of the House and Senate with Governor Sean Parnell. This came as quite a surprise to me. They disagree with him on policies. For example, the gas line to the states with Canada, they're worried about that, if it's ever going to happen. They're worried about the tax policy that Governor Palin put into place. And they're also anxious to build a gas line to South Central Alaska. Several members told me that explicitly. It was surprising to see the differences. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.